The title of the class is Halakhic Aspects of Shabbos and New Technology. The real discussion is electricity and Shabbos, but since this is a contemporary halakha class, we have to talk about something contemporary, and electricity itself is sort of outdated. You know, the original discussions of electricity are, you know, they would seem to be gone, but in truth, the basics are what we really need to know. In terms of new technology, you know, I'm not against technology at all, but in terms of the challenges that we face going into the next century, in terms of Shabbos, it's just going to get harder and harder. You know, what used to be, a simple refrigerator now has a microprocessor, and you know, it's just going to be, you know, the next level is. And this is not science fiction. You know, they're developing now refrigerators where when you put food in, it registers it when you take food out, and they'll send you an email in terms of your inventory and what's in your fridge. And the ovens are much more complicated. You know, this past yontif, we had a few three-day yontifs. And with electric ovens especially, in Florida, we don't have gas lines. So we have to use electric ovens. It's even more complicated than just the standard Washington Heights gas oven. And so I told my wife, you know, just take a sterno, put it in the grill, and, you know, forget the electricity. Do it the way they used to do it in the days of old. So it's very challenging. I'm going to present basically some of the basic issues. I can't really speak about every single appliance from A to Z. I gave a whole semester course about electricity and Shabbos at Stern College 2 years ago, and I'm sort of condensing it into an hour and a half. But this should just be enough to get the basics of what you need to know, hopefully you'll be able to have a better understanding of what's going on and some of the klalim, some of the principles involved, and that should be helpful. Okay, so I drew here. This is basically, we're just going to go through like a little fourth grade science, just to get, and I'm not sure if this is the right way to draw it. This is what I think it should look like. So basic electric circuit has some sort of power source, I think this is the way they draw it, and a load and a switch. And basically the way electricity works is you have a power source, and electrons, as they flow through the power, as they flow around, meaning if you separate an electron off of an atom, so it's going to try to find its way back to neutrality. So if you only give the electron, it can't go this way up against the back through the power source. So this is a very simplistic approach to understanding it. So it's got to pass through around the whole circuit, and as it passes through the load, so it's going to create resistance. Okay, so the load could be a number of things. The load could be heat, it could be a heat source, it could be light, it could be a motor, which, let's say, spins a fan. It could be a million different things, and throw in microprocessors in the mix as well. And I don't even know how they work, but you always have to keep in mind that pretty much everything now, from a kid's toy that costs $10 to your cell phone, everything else has a microprocessor involved. But the basic idea of the switch is always there, meaning the switch is always going to be the on-off signal. So when the circuit's closed, right, it's a little confusing just because, like, you know, especially if, you know, you come from your grandparents as beginners or something, so they call it open the light. Right? You don't open when you open the light, you close the circuit, and that allows the electrons to flow through and the light goes on. When the circuit is open, there's no electricity flowing through whatever device or appliance you're using. So that's the basics of electricity. Okay, now when we talk about electricity and Shabbos, there's a few different categories which we have to think about. So let's say that there's one category of devices where it's, you know, the discussion is not really relevant to turning them on or off, but more in terms of how they're used. So for example, you know, if you had a shaver, so you can't shave on Shabbos, right? Correct? That's the Malacha of Gozes. You couldn't. So in theory, the discussion about using a shaver on Shabbos has nothing to do with flicking the switch. If somebody wants to turn their shaver on, leave it on before Shabbos, they'll still violate the Malacha of Gozes when they put the shaver to their face, or a lawnmower. And pretty much Many, many appliances are like that. We don't need to discuss those. That you have to learn the rest of Shulchan Aruch for if you want to know whether you can leave a device on and then use it on Shabbos. So you learn the rest of Hilchos Shabbos. The discussions about electricity on Shabbos focus on two other categories. One, where the actual load produces a malacha. So the classic example, and we'll get into more details of that, is a light bulb. So assuming that a light bulb, that igniting a light bulb is a violation of malacha of Havara, so then turning on a light would be a violation of Havara. Right? But then you have loads where there's no malacha per se produced. For example, a fan. Right? So if you took a fan without electricity, you just went to a broken fan and you started spinning it around, that wouldn't be a malacha. Right? So the issue there is, can you plug in, or if you plug in the fan, so what is that? Is that a malacha d'oraisa, malacha d'rabbanan? Is that something different? So let's start with that discussion. What's the issur of plugging in a fan? Again, the load itself has no malacha involved. To take a fan and blow on it or spin it, it's not a malacha. It's only when you plug in the fan and turn on the switch and you complete the circuit, that's when we have to deal with what's the issue. So if you go, and the packet basically is mostly longer pieces. I didn't put in primary sources, you know, the Gemaras that they all discuss. They're mostly the contemporary discussion since the invention of electricity. We have a few Gemaras when we get to the next section. We're going to basically go, there's three sections that we're going to discuss today. One is the basics, of the issur of electricity. Then we're going to talk about grama and how it relates to timers and thermostats, things like that. And then we'll talk about psik resha, which is probably the most prevalent issue. I ran out of time last time in terms of psik resha, but I think that's going to be the most prevalent issue going forward into the, I don't know what's going to be 50 years from now, but at least the next 10 years. That's going to be a major issue to tackle. Okay, so in terms of the basics of electricity, everyone quotes, Rav Chaim Ozer has a tshuva about electricity, that it's not grama. Okay, what is he talking about? He's talking about a light bulb. So Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski was asked whether flipping the switch is considered grama. Why should it be considered grama? So they argued that you're basically closing the switch and you're allowing the electrons to flow, which they weren't able to do before. And it should be like opening up a spigot of water and letting the water flow through. So Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski concludes that it is not grama. So turning on a light would be a malacha d'oraisa, assuming that the light bulb, he doesn't deal with the actual completion of a circuit, but the light bulb there has a malacha at the end of it, and so he felt that it would not be grama. It's a malacha d'oraisa. The Beis Yitzchak is the one who deals with, you know, our case, let's say the fan. So the fan has no, you know, malacha at the end of the load, on the load itself. So what happens when you turn on, let's say, or to talk into a microphone, or to turn on a microphone on Shabbos? So the Beis Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Shmelkis, this is in the packet on the first page. So he suggests the following. The Gemara Beitza on Daf Chaf Gimel talks about this prohibition of molid recha, to infuse scent into a garment. Okay, so the Gemara says that molid recha is aser on yantiv, and then a kol shekein on Shabbos. So you can't take a garment and soak it in some sort of scent in order to infuse scent into the garment. And Rashi there says that it's like a kein misakin. It's like a misakin mana midrabana. So the Beis Yitzchak suggests that the prohibition of electricity is based on the same idea. Just as molid recha is aser, molid anything is aser. So if you're molid current into a circuit, so that's a violation of this more of his expansive definition of molid. And again, according to that, it would be an iser drabanon to turn on a fan. In 1935, and you can read, we'll read a little bit of this inside. There's a I don't know if pages aren't numbered, but the Minchas Shlomo, Simen Chafei, this is in Minchas Shlomo Tinyana. There's two posthumous volumes with pretty much all the same tshuvas. There's a red one and a black one. This is the black one. So he tells you sort of the history of what was going on. So What happened was his mother, this was in 1935. How old was Rishon Zalman Auerbach in 1935? 25 years old. So his mother needed a hearing aid. Now the hearing aids in those times were obviously not as advanced as the hearing aids that we have now. So the battery life, you know, now we can get into a cell phone what used to be like, you used to need a car battery to charge. So you can imagine that these batteries didn't last too long. These tiny little batteries that go with the hearing aid didn't last too long. So in order for anyone to use a hearing aid, they basically only turned it on when somebody was talking to them. And then right after somebody stopped talking to them, they would turn it off. And that's the only way to make it through Shabbos without having to change the hearing aid. So his mother wanted to use a hearing aid on Shabbos, so she asked her son, who was, just learning Kol at the time, you know, can you give me a hand in terms of figuring out what to do? So he researched the issue. And he concluded that it's mutter for her to turn on and off her hearing aid. Okay? Then a little while later, the Sefer Chazanish came out, and Rishon Zalman Auerbach was reading through Sefer Chazanish, and he reads what's here on Siman Nun, Sifkat and Tess, on the page before, that the Chazanish held that completing a circuit is a violation of the Malacha of Bona. Why does the Chazanish hold that it's a violation of Malacha Bonet? Because, and some of this comes out of the correspondence between the two of them, but he basically compares, he says anything, anytime, let's start with this basic episode, anytime you have two pieces that can't exist independently, and when you put them together, they form a unit that can exist as something new, so that's a Malacha of Bonet. And he says, even though there's a discussion whether Yesh Binyan B'Kalim or Ain Binyan B'Kalim, this is not subject to that discussion. This, everyone will agree, is a Malacha of Bonet. Okay, so, yeah.
What do you mean to take two things that can exist separately? I have this 2x4 and I have this 2x4. If I nail them together, so now I have
right.
2x4 nailed together.
Right. But, no, that's clearly Bonet. Right, if you start building a house, the Rambam says that's a violation of Malacha Bona. The Chazanish is saying if you complete something,
What does it mean they can't? Right.
So for example, there's a discussion post this Chazanish, like putting together a syringe on Shabbos. Let's say somebody needs an injection on Shabbos. So it could be that the Chazanish holds that since the top half of the syringe is worthless and the bottom half of the syringe is worthless, and only when you put the two together. Does it form something new that's useful? So the Chazanish considered that a Malacha of Bona. Let's just take it as is, because there's a lot of back and forth here, and in the end we may or may not understand the Chazanish's psak, because I'm not sure I understand it totally, but that's what he said. Okay. So. I'm only reading this because I think there's what to learn, there's a Musar Haskalah to learn from this paragraph. So here's Rishon Zalman. He reads the Chazanish and he finds out that what he told his mother to turn on and off the switch, his mutter, is really a violation of Malacha Bona, right, according to the Chazanish. So he writes to the Chazanish, Psak zeh shel Rabbeinu garam li tzar, it caused me a lot of agony. Kizeh lamala me'eser shonim, shahayu li maso matan bezeh, Emechad mitchashuvei hamotzim at a moratzedek shibu Yerushalayim shukvar ba'amad dekashet. Right, so this moratzedek died somewhere between 1935 and 1948. I sat down with Rabbi Chalap once to try to figure out who it was, and whatever. There weren't too many people around in Yerushalayim between 1935 and 1948 of that stature who would have issued such a psalm. But it's possible that it was Rav Kook. Rabbi Chalap gave me a few names, but. Of the ones that met the description of dying between 1935 and 1948, not too many of them fit. So I don't know who it was. Whoever it was told him that it was okay, right? The Acharei Iyun Rav Hiskim Ledvari VaTisi Masel Ahatir LeImim Morosi Tichy Shel Tzareinu Hagado Kavda Aznei Mishmol Lishtamish Mishabes Hamachon Shakolotes Kol Medaber UMeKarvasa LaOzen Hashomea VuMamish Telephone Katan Shepol Al Yedei Evan Chashmali. So he describes the whole thing, right? And he says in the next paragraph that lat nuaz lo lachush vazel amakav patish al tikkun manem, right? Because, and he tells you why, and we'll explain why in a minute. And And he writes that he's very, he says somewhere in here that I found out that I was nichshol chas v'shalom in the Yisur Bona. Okay? So he was willing to accept the Chazon Ish and said, I am moda that you're right, but please explain to me where I went wrong here. That was, that, you know, that that's anava. Right? So Rav Shlomo Zalman's tainas are basically all of the same brand. He has his own way. If you read a lot of Rav Shlomo Zalman's tshuvas, he has a certain logic that, you know, that his style of logic is very interesting, which we don't have time to go into now. So he brings proofs from things, you know, which may or may not be true, but they're pretty much accepted. But his basic premise is the following, that when we talk about bona, anytime we talk about bona, something that's meant to be opened and closed is not a violation of bona. The Mordechai talks about this. If you open up the door right now, you're not breaking the building. You're just leaving the room. And when you close the door, you're not fixing the building. Right? Even if there's a hurricane coming, you're still not fixing the building when you close the door. Right? So that's Rav Shlomo Zalman's basic premise, that whatever is meant to be opened and closed is not can't be a violation of bona. And he admits, he says, let's say you want to change the battery. Right? So you want to change the battery in the hearing aid. So that would be a problem, because when the battery runs out, the hearing aid is broken. Right? So when you put a new battery in, you're fixing it. Or he gives an example. The post can talk about whether the old watches you have to wind up. So there are some poskim who say winding a watch is an iser deoraisa, because it's bona, misakin, whatever you want to call it. You know, I think bona and misakin here, depending on who you're reading, are used interchangeably. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, fine, you're right, that winding a watch is a malacha of bona, simply because if the watchmaker could have made such a watch that you buy it the first day and you never have to wind it up again, he certainly would have done so. So the fact that you have to wind up the watch is a flaw in its functionality. So now when the watch is out of winds, so now it's broken. It's broken, you know, and you have to wind it because Nebuch, you got a watch that can't run on its own. Right? And this is quoted in the discussion of other wind-up toys that, you know, some toys you would like to be able to wind it up and have it go on forever. Although most toys you'd rather have them shut down at some point before you lose your mind. So depending on what it is, you know, if it's one of these things that you would... I've seen this quoted in contemporary discussions, that anything that's windable depends how you view it. Do you view it as broken when you have to wind it again, or do you view it as that's the way it normally is? So Shlomo Zalman says, let's say you had a light that you couldn't shut off, right? So when you went to sleep at night, so you couldn't shut it off. So that would be a flaw in its functionality. So when you shut the light off at the, you know, before you go to sleep, you didn't break the whole thing. You just shut it off, and you want to be able to turn it off and turn it on when you please. That's why they put the switch in there for you, so you could turn it, right? Nobody ever, you know, built a house and made light bulbs without switches, even though you could do that. Right? You could physically build, you know, a room where there's no light switches. The light just stays on the whole time until it blows out. Nobody does that. Why? Because that's what the switch is for. You should be able to open and close it. So after there was a whole back and forth, you could read some of it's here in Mincha Shlomo's in the here. The only reason why I printed this is because the actual letter that Rav Shlomo Zalman wrote is printed here. He didn't print his own letter in Mincha Shlomo, the one he put out when he was alive. So his sons decided that it's worth it to print it. So the responses from the Chazon Ish are there, and then Rav Shlomo Zalman has comments after. But he was, after two letters, he writes, you know, that's it. I'm not going to bother the Chazon Ish anymore. This is my own mishigas, whatever, and I'm going to have to just accept it. Or accept that I'm not going to understand it. But so in the end of the day, he didn't understand the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish, what he adds in the letters, if you read the letters, is that he says, don't be misled to think that flipping the switch itself is the problem. Meaning, according to the Chazon, even the Chazon Ish would agree, if you had no load, let's say you took out all the light bulbs in the room, and you just wanted to flip the switch, that wouldn't be a problem. Right? That's you're not doing anything. It's that the fact that, and he even illustrates this with an example. If let's say instead of a switch, you had just a gap in the circuit, and you took a quarter, you know, what thieves do, they hotwire the car. So if you hotwired the car, so you didn't flip any switch, you just turned it on by connecting wires. So the Chazanish said that's also bona. Because the way he explains it is that when you take everything and you harness, and it was built what he calls b'chachma, it was built with chachma, and now you take it and you put it all together and you harness it and it's all in one nice package and you sort of bring it to life, that's a malacha bona according to the Chazanish. That's what he felt. How we're supposed to understand that? So you could take that at face value if you don't understand it, or Shlomo didn't understand it either. So after the two letters, he didn't disagree with him. He didn't, but he gave up. Right? He said, "This correspondence I'm going to have to put to a halt." Okay, so we have, let's just summarize. We have the Chazon Ish, who holds that there's a malacha bona d'oraisa by completing a circuit. You have the Beis Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Shmelkes, who holds that it's molid. And then we'll talk about halacha l'maisa in terms of what Rosh Hashanah Zalman held, or what his Talmidim held, but those are the two basic shitas. So now we have to discuss, what's the nafka mina, whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, and what's the nafka mina between bona and molid? Okay, so d'oraisa d'rabbanan, basically there are three categories, and we're not going to have time to go into everything. Not nearly enough time, but maybe it'll be covered in other sections. But basically, cholish embo sakana. So what's it din by a cholish embo sakana? Just in a nutshell. So at least lower level drabonans are okay for a cholish embo sakana. Maybe not, you know, the Shefter has an idea about zeros versus malachos, but it could be that cholish embo sakana is an afkamina. If it's just molid, then yeah, for a cholish embo sakana, you'd be okay. A cholish embo sakana is somebody who's bedbound, but not in a life-threatening situation. Okay, another area to explore is amir al nachri. Right, so amir al akum is for an iser d'oraisa is never permitted. However, the Rambam, we pass him like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam that for a goy to violate what for us would be an iser drabonon is mutter b'makom mitzvah or b'makom tsar or b'makom tzorech. We're not going to get into what the definition of tsar, tzorech, mitzvah are, but that's an important afkamina between d'oraisas and drabons. And then the third area, which is not maybe not fundamentally different, but practically you may have a different psak, is psik resha, which we'll try very hard to get to at the end of this class. Okay, now that's an afkamina between d'oraisa and d'rabbanan. What's the difference between bona and molid? Right, if the iser is bona, so is that different between calling it bona or molid? So one difference may be turning the device off. Again, if this could be why the Chazon Ish stressed that it's bona and not misaking. So what's the counter, the opposite of bona is soser. So if you can't build something, you can't break something. So the Chazon Ish says explicitly that if completing a circuit is bona, so undoing a circuit is considered soser. Okay, whereas molid, there's no iser. Let's say you have a garment that smells nicely, there's no iser in taking it outside and airing it out. There's no iser to defuse the smell from the shirt. So it could be that there's no iser of molid to turn something off. Another difference may be, and again, this may not actually be an afkamina, but what about, let's say, changing the current in something? So let's say you have a device, like a volume switch. Again, today's volume switches are much different than the old ones, but you still have sometimes a volume switch that's not digital and it's not based on some more complicated microprocessor. It's just a regular volume switch, which in electric terms is called a potentiometer or a rheostat. So basically all it does is it changes the amount of current flowing through the resistor, the load. So depending on how much current goes in, that's how much output you'll get out of your speakers. Okay, so although this is not a compelling nafka mina, there are poskim who say that according to the idea that it's molid, so the Gemara says explicitly that if something already has a scent to it, right, you're allowed to add more scent to that garment. Gemara says that for favors. So if you have a scented garment, you're allowed to pour on more scent onto the garment. So you can see how people will extrapolate that to electricity, that you have current flowing. Let's say the volume is 1, you want to raise it to 2. According to the Beis Yitzchak, it's arguable that that's mutter. Whereas according to the Chazon Ish, since this is partly because we don't understand so much what he's saying, but to raise the electricity, to raise the volume, is sort of like to give it a whole new status. So you basically took your volume 1 device and changed it to a volume 2 device. So there are those that argue that the Chazon Ish would be more hesitant to allow that. Yeah?
How about like a dimmer also?
Dimmers are a little bit more, it used to apply to a dimmer. Again, a dimmer will always have that added discussion of Havara, right? So it's a light dimmer. Dimmers now work a little differently. They used to just be like this, you know, like a volume switch. Now, I'm not sure I understand it 100%, but there's a, the way alternating current works, it works like a sine curve. So the electricity, you know, basically the lights are going off and on 60 times a second. So you can't see it and I can't see it, but I guess God knows that they're going on and off 60 times a second. So what the dimmer does, it just cuts out. Like, instead of it going on 60 times a second, it'll go on 30 times a second. So that's a more complicated discussion. It will only relate to Yontif anyway, because you have the Havara issue. And turning on and off, whatever. It's a little complicated. Okay. Now, one area that's not an Afkamina, and I'm saying this because this is a common misconception, is Yontif. Right, molid is asur on yantiv, and bona is asur on yantiv. And Rav Schwartz is waiting for me to say, you know, and this, we discussed this when we learned Beitzah together. There is a Tosos on that Tzadi Hay in Shabbos that talks about bona on yantiv. So Tosos, quoting the Gemara, says that making cheese is a violation of bona. So Tosos asks, so if making cheese is bona, so then you could build a house on Shabbos on yantiv. Because mitoch that making cheese is melechas ochel nefesh, so too building a house should be mutter, the same way that you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah. So Tosus there says that bona on yantiv is drabona, which is a big chiddush, and the Rush Beitza might also say this. But either way, bona does apply on yantiv. There's no way around that. So people. And I'll tell you where it comes from. People are under the impression that on Yantiv, electricity is different. Electricity is not different. There were poskim, in the early days, there were poskim who did not go with bona or molad. They were only concerned about Havara. And so Havara on Yantiv is mutter if it's not molad age, which we'll get to in a minute. So that's where that misconception comes from. But, and we'll talk about halacha lemaisa, but that's not an accepted approach nowadays. Turning on a light in Yantiv is like turning on your air conditioner. Just because there's another malacha involved in turning on the light doesn't make the original malacha of completing the circuit any better. Okay, so now lemaisa, in terms of what's accepted, I put in here, and it could be Rav Schechter has it in his new sefer. I haven't had a chance to see it, but I think this is the only place Rav Schechter deals with the actual issue of electricity. But he says it in Shir a lot, and it's in a tshuva that he has about these what were they called again? These meals. They're ready to eat meals. I forgot what they're called, but basically what it is you mix two chemicals and it makes like this big explosion, and it heats your food. So Rav Schechter writes that he thinks making a chemical reaction on Shabbos is a problem of makabe patish midrabanan. And he compares it to a Gemara Ksuvis, that the Gemara Ksuvis, according to some Rishonim, at least it's an Isser Drabanan to unclog your drain pipe. And if you have a drain pipe that's stuffed with leaves, So the Gemara says you're allowed to unclog a b'shinui, which the Rishonim explained because it's not an Isser D'oraisa, it's an Isser D'rabbanan. So Rav Schechter says, anytime you have like the water, you know, the flow is blocked and you allow it to flow again, so you're setting up a system, you know, you set a system into motion, so that's Makav Apatish Midrabbanan. So it's sort of like accepting the Chazon Ish, but on a D'rabbanan level as opposed to D'oraisa. Yeah.
The sink in my kitchen.
I know. I asked Rav Schechter this. How come if I'm...
When I turn it on, now it's not blocked.
Yeah. Right. See, you're going to have to come to the point. I asked Rav Schechter the same thing. How come you're allowed to flush your toilet on Shabbos? So he said, yeah, it doesn't work out exactly, meaning that you're going to have to answer that the toilet and the sink are meant to be used that way. And then you can say the same thing about electricity. But the Isser that people have accepted in terms of the Isser of electricity is dumya to that. It's not an exact comparison, but it's meaning if you had to categorize, well, we don't use electricity, so you'd fall more in line with the Chazon Ish, but not on a D'oraisa level, on a D'rabbanan level. Rav Shlomo Zalman himself, it's interesting. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa was written by Rav Neubert, who was a Talmud of Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman personally read through the Sefer many times. It says in his biography that he learned it with his wife at every meal. So it's not like it's just like some Talmud out there who wrote a Sefer. He was very involved in the Sefer. And ironically, he does not address this issue head on anywhere in the Sefer. Right? This is one of his like major, you know, if you were writing a biography of Rosh Hashanah, you couldn't leave out his research on electricity, and yet they totally left it out of the Sefer. So the reason why is because Rav Shlomo Zalman at the end of one of his tshuvas writes, you know, I can't convince the Chazon Ish, I'm not going to argue on the Chazon Ish, so we'll accept the Chazon Ish, and you know, the Beis Yitzchak also was a big gadol, I'm not going to argue on him either, and he says the words Kfar Hora Zakein, right, the elder already ruled, so we're not going to go against it, and that's what he basically accepted. But did he accept the Chazon Ish to the point to say that it's an Isser D'oraisa or just that it's an Isser D'rabbanan? Meaning, we'll be choshish for the Chazon Ish, but only to a certain point. So here, you know, they probably did not intend for you to find these Ramazan, but there are a number of hints within the Shmir Shabbos Hilchasa to the latter approach, meaning that they'll accept the Chazon Ish, but not that it's an Isser D'oraisa, rather an Isser D'rabbanan. And I found another one over Yontif. I had three, but now I have four. Okay, so the one I found over Yontif is he's talking about using an electric water tank on Yontif. Now again, Yontif, you're allowed to cook water. Again, it's, without getting into the issue of bathing on Yontif, you're allowed to heat up water from the water tank to wash your hands, feet, and legs, according to everybody. Okay? So the problem with the hot water tank is that you have a tank of water, and so when you take out the hot water, more cold water comes in. So on Shabbos, you're cooking the water, but that's not a problem on Yontif. The problem on Yontif is that now the thermostat, let's say that the temperature is supposed to be 120 degrees, when you take a whole bathtub full of hot water out of the tank, so now a whole bathtub full of cold water is going into the tank, it's going to drop the tank down to 80 degrees or whatever. I don't know, I've never been in there. But whatever temperature it is, it's going to cause the thermostat to kick in. So if you have a gas tank, it's not a problem on Yontif. The gas is on, there's a pilot light. It's good for you guys to know this anyway. There's a pilot light there that's on at all times. And so the gas, you know, will just increase based on the amount of temperature of heat that's needed. And that's not a problem on Yontif. But if you have an electric tank, it's off when the water's not being heated, the electric filament in the tank is off, and when you get the water in, it turns on. Okay, so is that a problem? Meaning you turn on the sink, you turn on your hot water, and you're almost immediately going to ignite the filament inside the heating tank. So he has a cheshvin there in Shmir Shabbos Hilchasa that it's mutter. Why? Because molid eish on Yontif is only d'rabbanan. Well, molid eish on Yontif is only d'rabbanan. Great. But what about the fact that electricity is d'oraisa? So what do you see? That he wasn't really concerned about that. He has almost the same discussion about a cholish imbo sakana, can he make a telephone call on Yantiv? And again, he says, no, moladesh on Yantiv is only drabana. Moladesh, what does that have to do with a telephone? So in the old telephones, you know, the ones where you had to like dial it up and let it wind back around, so there used to be, I don't know if anyone's even seen this, I've seen it, there used to be a little light bulb on there that like counted the number of clicks as it went back to, you know, to the original. You guys know what a
rotary telephone.
So the rotary telephone had a light bulb, so when you turn it on and let go, the light would keep going on. So on Yantiv, that's only Moladesh. What about our telephones? They don't have a light bulb in there anymore. So it sounds like, according to Rav Neubert, it's mutter for Chol Shein Bo Sakana nowadays to use a telephone, to call, not just to use a telephone, to call a doctor to treat his particular illness. Now, if electricity is deoraisa, so every time you press a button or every time you dial the phone, it's going to be a violation of a deoraisa. Chol Shein Bo Sakana can't violate a deoraisa. Elamai, that he wasn't choshesh, that there was a malacha deoraisa using electricity. And then he has another psak that it's mutter to ask Amir al-Nachri. It's mutter to ask a Nachri to turn on an air conditioner on Shabbos when it's very hot. Okay, what's that based on? Look in the footnote there. What does it say? It says, look in the Minchas Yitzchak, Chelek Gimel, Simen Kuf Chav Gimel. What does it say in the Minchas Yitzchak, Chelek Kuf Chav Gimel? Electricity is drabanon, and Amir al-Nachri is drabanon, so it's a shvus to shvus, makom tsar. Okay? So how could he quote the Minchas Yitzchak if he held that electricity was deoraisa? So that, I mean, generally it's accepted around the world that electricity is some sort of iser drabanan, probably more in line with the Chazon Ish, but a watered-down version of the Chazon Ish. And B'nai Brak, they still hold like the Chazon Ish. So Rabbi Rosen from Machon Somet was here, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? So he said if you walked into Kolol Chazon Ish in B'nai Brak with a hearing aid on, everyone would stop talking. So
On Shabbos,
yeah. Okay, let's talk for a few minutes about lights, and then we'll move on to Grama. Fourth is Chol HaMoed. He has some heter on Chol HaMoed. He says, because Chol HaMoed, he holds that using a disc, to save something onto a disc would be a malacha deraisa of bona. Like saving something, not because of electricity, but because you just produced a disc that used to be worthless and now it's worth something, or a better disc. So he says, like he distinguishes between a calculator and a disc. So what's the difference between a calculator and a disc? The difference is that one has a malacha bona deraisa. What about the calculator? There's no malacha deraisa of bona? Obviously not. So I don't know if he gives the calculator example. Maybe that was my own example, but it's clear from that psak in Hilchas Chol HaMoed that he didn't consider the electricity to be a full-fledged malacha. Okay, now lights. Let's try to do this quickly. We go till 2:40. Okay. Lights. So there's different kind of lights, and now this is one thing where technology is getting more, not more complicated. This is usually technology is not good for people who are keeping Shabbos. It makes things more complicated. Lights is one area where it has certain complications, but then there are solutions also from technology. Okay, so the old incandescent light bulb is basically what it is a glowing hot piece of metal. It's hard to see in a regular 60 watt bulb, but if you look at, you know, a tiny little nightlight, you'll see it's just a piece of metal that's on fire. Okay, and it's heated up to about 2500 degrees Fahrenheit. A halogen bulb is basically the same thing, just they use different gases. It allows it to get even hotter, 4500 degrees, and thus it burns brighter. You only see about 40% of the light that's produced by a light bulb. It's not energy efficient. That's why everyone's switching over to fluorescence. On the other end of the spectrum, you have LEDs. LEDs are those little indicator lights. You have them like here. This is an indicator light. It's a tiny little light. It doesn't have any heat. It runs. It's a diode. It's called a light-emitting diode. It works by there are photons in the atoms that when you charge them up, so they produce light. Okay, so it's just a gas. And then fluorescents are in the middle of the spectrum. Some fluorescents are closer to incandescent bulbs, and some closer to LED lights. Halakhically, not in any other sense. Basically, a fluorescent light is basically you're seeing glowing phosphor in the light bulb. That's not the problem. The complication. The complication is how you get the light to go on in the first place. So in order to get a fluorescent light to go on, there has to be there's an electron gap that has to be bridged. So there's two basic ways to bridge that gap. Either by sending a high voltage charge of electricity, and that overflows the electron gap, and the electrons get, I don't understand exactly what this all means, but they get to the other side and the light goes on. Or you can use heat. Right, you heat up the filament to a certain temperature, and that gets the light to go on. So let's keep that in mind and discuss lighting in general. Okay, so what we want to discuss now is there a malacha, or what is the malacha of heating up a piece of metal? Right, to take a piece of metal and heat it up to the point that it gets glowing red hot. So there is a Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says on Daf Lamed Daled that in order to heat up the water for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, so what they did was they took iron rods and they heated them up before Yontif, before Yom Kippur, and they threw them in the water on Yom Kippur itself. And so Rishonim already are medayik from this, that the reason why they did it before Yom Kippur is because we have this rule that Ein Shavus B'Mikdash, right? You can violate Yisurim D'Rabbanan in the Mikdash, but you can't violate Yisurim D'Oraisa. And so they wouldn't be allowed to heat up the metal on Yom Kippur itself and throw it into the water, because you can't heat up metal. That's an Isur D'Oraisa of heating up metal on Yom Kippur. That's how the Magen Mishnah. The Magen Mishnah quotes this Gemara as the source for the Rambam's Psak, that if you heat up metal to the point where it's glowing red hot, so that's a Malacha D'Oraisa. Okay, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says that if you have, it's not that Mem Beis Amud Aleph, if you have a Gachelah Shel Mateches, you have a glowing hot piece of metal that's in Rishus HaRabim, so you're allowed to extinguish it. Rishus Shelo Yaziku Bo Rabim, in order that the Rabim don't get injured. So most Rishonim, and this is even according to Rabbi Yehuda holds Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa is Chayev. So the Gemara says even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that you're allowed to extinguish this Gachelah Shel Mateches on Shabbos. So most Rishonim take the following approaches, the Rambam, Rashi, that igniting or heating up a piece of metal that it's glowing red hot is an Issur D'Oraisa, but extinguishing it is an Issur D'Rabbanan. Why? Because the original Malacha of Kibui is to make a pechem, to make some sort of coal. And with a Gachelah Shel Mateches, so you'll never be able to make a pechem, and therefore that's not part of the Malacha of Kibui. Okay? There's a difference between Rashi and the Rambam in terms of whether it's an av or a tolda, but that doesn't really relate to halacha l'maisa. We don't have time to go into it. And then there's the minority opinion, the Piskei Arid, that is medayik from the Gemara and Shabbos, that if it's mutter to be mechaba gachelah shel mateches, so it must be that gachelah shel mateches is not a bar havara and it's not a bar kibui, meaning there's no havara or kibui on a gachelah shel mateches. That's the minority opinion, the Piskei Arid. So the poskim, starting from Rav Chaim Ozer, already said that if you turn on a light on Shabbos or on Yontif, it's going to be a malacha of havara. To heat up a piece of metal that is glowing red hot is a malacha de'oraisa. That's the basic maskana of most of the contemporary poskim. In terms of extinguishing meaning turning off a light bulb. So again, you have two issues. One is turning on and turning off a light bulb is no worse than turning off a fan. So that's right. So that's whatever. If we're going to assume that it's a drabanan, so it's a drabanan to turn off that light bulb. But it's not going to be exacerbated just because it's a light bulb. Simply because, according to most Rishonim, kibui of a gachelah shel mateches is an Isser Drabanan as opposed to an Isser Daraisa. It may be more chamor of an Isser than electricity itself, because it's like a Malacha Drabanan. But that Rosh Shlomo Zalman points this out, that everyone will agree that turning off a Gachal Hashem Atechas is not going to be the Malacha of Kibui. There is a discussion. Rav Moshe has a chiddush about turning off gas, which relates to this discussion, but I can't get into it now. And Rav Shlomo Zalman, basically, from his discussion on electricity, you see he doesn't hold like Rav Moshe in terms of turning off the gas on Yantif, or on Shabbos for that matter. But we don't have time to get into it now. Okay. So just to summarize in terms of lighting, so again, an incandescent bulb, a halogen bulb would be deoraisa to turn on. So that's that people should be aware of, that you know, a mirul nafri for an air conditioner is much different than a mirul nafri for a light to turn on, to turn off already. So again, if it's a makom tzorech to warrant getting a goy to do a shvus to shvus, so turning off the light would be one of those areas that would be okay.
These air conditioners, there's no wires that get red hot, or
not red hot. They would melt. Yeah. Now, I asked the same question to an engineer. He's like, even the laptop, you know, a laptop can get really hot, but as hot as it gets, if the wires got red hot, they would melt. So they may get up to 200-300 degrees inside, but and you feel it on the outside.
And that's not considered chavara.
And that, right, there is a discussion. The Chazon Ish has another chavara. The Chazon Ish says that there's a chati shir of chavara on metal. So the Chazon Ish says, for example, you can't take a blech and put it on the fire on Shabbos, even though the blech's not going to get glowing red hot, but it's a chati shir of chavara. And it's Aser Minatara. Chatzi Shir is Aser Minatara. And Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Moshe both disagree with the Chazon Ish in terms of the blech. Rav Moshe says that if it's impossible to get up to the Shir of Red Hat, so then there's no Iser Chatzi Shir. Rav Shlomo Zalman has some interesting hours on this, not in terms of the blech, but he says electricity. He says, so let's say it gets the glowing red hat. So he has this idea that it may be like Bishul Bachama. So, I'm sorry. One second. Let me back up. Havara is not a problem until it gets to glowing red hot. But there's another malacha of Bishul on Mateches. And the malacha of Bishul, the shear is where it starts to melt. So the Chazon Ish said that, granted that there's no Havara when you put the blech on, but it's a chatzi shear of Bishul when you put the blech on the stove. So I'm sorry. So Rav Moshe says if it can never get to the melting point, that's not a problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman says even if it's Bishul, it'd be like Bishul Bachama, which is another discussion which you don't have time for now. It's like cooking in the sun. And then he says that, and this is a famous Chakira, you know, when you're learning Masechta Shabbos, this comes up all the time, that he doesn't think it's a Chatzi Shir, he thinks it's a Chatzi Malacha. We don't have time to get into the details of that. Yeah. They weren't, meaning, even the Chazon Ish talks about Bishul. I wasn't going to get into Bishul because it's practically irrelevant. Because even the Chazon Ish says that, yes, you'll tell me that when you turn on a light bulb, you're also over on Bishul. You know, besides Havar, you're over on Bishul. But the Bishul is definitely no lo nichale. Right? Well, no, the Rambam and the Ravid both hold it. The Ravid holds that there's only Bishul, I believe. The Rambam in Perek Tes mentions Bishul, and in Perek, or the other way around, in one place he says Bishul, one place he says Havara. I think in Tes and Yud Beis. In Perek Tes he mentions Bishul of Mateches, and in Perek Yud Beis he mentions Havara, I believe, or maybe it's the other way around. If you have it, let me know. Okay, so getting back to light bulbs, So the regular incandescent bulbs would be deraisa. The LED lights would be drabanan, right? They'd be the regular iser of electricity. And then the fluorescence, so depending on what type of fluorescent you have. So the ones that are called instant start have no filament that gets heated up to glowing red hot. The ones that are called rapid start or preheat do. Those screw-in fluorescent, you know the twisty screw-in bulbs that are very popular now? So those, and I wouldn't be so mecha on this 100%, but I sent an email to somebody who seemed to know this, you know this area, and he told me that Philips brand CFLs do have a filament in them, and the rest of them don't. Now this was 5 years ago, so things may have changed, and I'm not I think it says in the package, whether it's instant start or, it's actually called program start on the CFLs. If it says program start, so it would be an iser drabanan to turn it on, which again is relevant in these types of situations. Which we'll get to psikration, but this may be for people who need to use lights in their fridge. They're better off using the CFLs than the regular incandescent bulbs for situations where they forgot to take out the bulb before Shabbos. So things get much easier when you're not talking about an issue there.
Because filament in the non-instant start one is Havara?
Yeah, it would be Havara.
They get red hot.
Yeah, they do get red hot. Now, just in terms of Amir al-Nakhri, because we're not going to get to Psikresha on Amir al-Nakhri, that we definitely don't have time for. There is a kula that Psikresha is mutter. Amir al-Nakhri is mutter when the Nakhri himself is doing something that's a Psikresha. So there is a discussion about the electric light bulbs. Rabbi Willig has it in the Sefer. He hints to it that what if it's a process? Is that considered a Psikresha or is that one malacha? And that will be relevant to the fluorescent bulbs. Also, I'm pretty sure of this, that if the thing didn't get to glowing red hot, it would still go on, just it'll take another second or two. So maybe that's enough to define it as a psikresha as opposed to the actual malacha. I don't know. Just a thought. Practically, if you want to know if it's instant start or rapid start, so the instant start have one prong at the end, and the rapid start or the preheat have two, which most of them have two, if you've ever changed these light bulbs, certainly the older ones. Okay, now let's talk about grumma. Now the reason why I'm talking about grumma is not that it's not important, but we're not going to talk about what they call the grumma switches. Simply because we don't have time, and because they themselves will tell you that it has nothing to do with grumma. Okay, if you call them grumma switches in front of the people who designed them, they'll start yelling at you that it's not grumma, it's better than grumma. Okay, what I want to discuss is, and this comes up, although it will be less and less common now that everything is going digital, but we have timers, right? We have Shabbos clocks, and people want to know, are you allowed to adjust the timer on Shabbos? And now I'm talking about the standard timer with the pins. Everyone familiar with them? There's the green pins and the red pins, or the gray pins and the black pins, whatever color they are. One of them is on, one of them is off. And basically all it is, it's like a conveyor belt. You plug it in and the clock goes around and around. And there's like these buttons that flip the switch on and off. That's all it is. It's no big kunst in terms of an invention. The Maram Shik talks about it even before the invention of electricity. They had something like this. It was like a clock that would light a candle and then somehow blow it out a little bit later. I don't understand exactly how it worked, but he discusses it, which is important. Okay. So if we had to translate grumma on, you know, and nobody gave you time to think about it, so your initial reaction would be anything that's a time delay is considered grumma, right? Maybe, maybe not. But you all learned Bava Kamma last year, so you know that there's more to grumma than just a time delay, and a more rigorous definition is probably required. So the Gemara in Shabbos has the following discussion. If somebody has, let's say, there's a fire, and we're talking about a fire, let's say on a desert island. If the whole island burns down, nobody's gonna get hurt. So there's no danger involved. Okay. So there's a fire somewhere, and somebody's possessions are on the line if that fire spreads. So the Mishnah says that you're allowed to surround the fire with jugs of water. Okay? And what's going to happen when the fire reaches the jugs of water?
The jug will pop,
and the water will put out the fire. And the Gemara says that's mutter because of Brahmak. Okay, very good. So if that's our definition of grama, so we're good to go, right? However, there's a problem. The problem is, Gemara and Bava Kamma talks about whether Eish is what? Mishum Chitzov or Mishum Mamono. Right? Either Chitzov. So if it's Isho Mishum Chitzov, so what does that mean? It's your action, right? It's as if you are burning whatever gets burnt. You are burning the field as the fire spreads. Okay? Whereas Isha Mishimamono, the Mandama Resh Lakish tells Isha Mishimamono, it's not as if you are burning the field, it's as if your shore or something else is going around the burning the field. You're liable for whatever gets burnt, but you're not personally burning whatever the fire burns in its path. And what's the critical component of Eish? What's unique about Eish? What? Right? That when you light a fire and it spreads, the Torah says, Ki seitzei Eish matz kotzim, etc. So you're responsible even though there's a koach acher mu'urabo. Okay? So Tosos, in a number of places, the one in the packet here is Sanhedrin on Ayin Zayin. Tosus asks the following question. Tosus asks, and this is not with regards to the Gemara and Shabbos, we can ask the same question in terms of, I'll phrase it in terms of the Mishnah and Shabbos. Okay, the Gemara on Nunvav, in Baba Kama, says that if you are kofek hamasal shel chavero b'fnei hadaleika, you're chayav. Right, so you take, there's a fire coming down the path, and you put something in the path of the fire, so you're chayav. So Tosus is medayek, you see that Isha Mishim Chitzav doesn't apply, not only applies if you start the process, right, if you're Makarev HaEish Eitzel HaDavar, but also if you're Makarev HaDavar Eitzel HaEish, you bring something closer to the fire, you're also chayav, Mishim Chitzav. Okay? So the question is, isn't this case with the, isn't the case of surrounding the jugs of water, surrounding the fire with jugs of water, the exact same case of kofif kamasal shel chavero b'fnei hadaleika, right? In that case also, you're putting something in the path of the fire, and the fire is burning it, and you're chayav mishum chitzav. So what's the difference between the case of Bava Kamma and Daf Nun Vav, and the case of the Mishnah in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chaf? Yeah.
Isn't the fact that if I surround it with water, then the fire burns the thing that the water is in, and then the result of the thing, whatever, the bucket of water burning up, so then the water comes out of the bucket because the bucket got burned up.
Okay, so
So it's another step removed. If I take your bucket and put it in the bucket in the back of the fire.
No, but the malacha is to, let's say if I took a knife and stuck it in the jug and spilled the water out, so that would be kibul, right? So now I'm causing the fire to do that for me. You're on target though. So the Rishonim don't address this question directly. There are two answers in the Rishonim already that would answer the question, but it doesn't seem that we hold it like these Rishonim lahalachas. The Ramban says that you only are allowed to put the jugs of water if you have a suffix whether that water is going to be mechave the yesh. So there's a clear distinction now already. So if you dafka knew that the fire would put out the its own, right, the fire sort of would kill itself by putting the jugs around, so that would be usher according to the Ramban. It's only because it's a suffix. And the Shilta Giborim has a similar approach. He says that it depends on what your kavana is. So when somebody surrounds a fire with water, so what's he really trying to do? He's trying to contain the fire. So if the fire wants to just stay where it is and stay within that circle of jugs, so you'd be just as happy, you'd be even happier, because then you don't have to even replace the jugs, let alone your whole house. Right? So you'd be even happier if the fire just stayed where it was and didn't spread. If the fire happens to spread to the jugs, so you know that the jugs will be able to contain the water. But that's not your kavana. Your kavana is to contain the fire, not necessarily to put out the fire. Okay. So those two answers are good. The only problem is if you look in Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't sound like we follow either of those approaches. The Shulchan Aruch clearly rules against the Ramban. And Midiyuk, it doesn't sound like the Shilta Giborim is the approach either. So Rav Shlomo Zalman quotes from his uncle, Rav Menachem Parash, not from the Knesset. They're related, but this is his uncle, Rav Menachem Parash, who says that it depends whether the malacha starts to act right away or not. Now, what does this mean? And Rav Shechter has a similar idea from the Rav and in Big Fat Zone. So it took me like a few years to figure this out. But after sitting down with Rav Shechter a number of times, the way you have to explain it is the following. If you look in the Tosus in Sanhedrin, so there's a second day in Tosus. The first day in Tosus assumes that when the Gemara in Bava Kama in Vav says Kofef Kamasa Shachaver with Neha Deleika, right? So Yechayev. So the Tosus already sort of sold you on the idea that, yeah, of course, when it says Chayev, it's Chayev Mishum Chitzav, right? Tosus at the end maybe saying that it's chayev, but it's not chayev mishum chitzav, it's chayev mishum mamono. So even though kofef kamasu shel chaveiro b'fnei hadaleika is chayev, but it's not a personal action. So once we leave the realm of personal action, so now on Shabbos, it's not a problem. If in the zikin it's chayev mishum mamono, right, on Shabbos, it's not going to be chayev at all. Okay. So then what's the Iker Chiluk now? The Iker Chiluk is between Mekarev HaDavar Eitzla Eish or Mekarev HaEish Eitzla HaDavar. That if you bring the fire closer to the object, so that is a problem on Shabbos and it's a problem in Nizikin that you Chayev Mishim Chitzav. But if you're Mekarev HaDavar Eitzla HaEish, so then on Shabbos it's considered Groma. Okay? So let's keep that answer in mind. And then another answer is that there's a difference between Shabbos and, you can't compare Shabbos and Ezekiel from the outset. So you can do that in a number of different ways. The Maram Shik thinks that you limit it, Isha Mishum Chitzav only applies to Ezekiel, not to Ritzicha, not to Shabbos, not to any other area of Halacha. Or you could say that it applies everywhere except Shabbos, like Rav Shlomo Zalman says, Asiya hu da Asr HaGrama Shari, that's what the Gemara says, that when it says lo sase malacha, it has to be specifically an action, and anything which we could possibly call grama is not considered, even though it's not technically defined as grama, it's not a problem on Shabbos. Now when we say not a problem, just as an aside, it doesn't mean that it's mutter. It means that it's mutter in a very pressing situation, or on yontif. That's what the Bir Halacha in Tavkuf Yadal says, not the Bir Halacha, the Sharet Tzion in Tavkuf Yadal, it says that Grama's mutter on Yantiv, it's asr on Shabbos, unless it's like you're worried about your house burning down or something of that nature. Okay, so grama is, let's assume, is a problem, but it could be solved. If it's only grama, there are situations when it would work. If it's isha mishim chitzav, so then you're talking about a potential daraisa if you're talking about a timer that's attached to lights. Okay. So now let's talk about the bottom line. Are you allowed to put a pin on the timer? Let's say the timer is set for the lights to go on at 8 o'clock p.m. and you want them to go on at 7 o'clock p.m. So are you allowed to put that pin in? So according to the first two answers that we gave, the Ramban and the Shilta Giborim, for sure not. Because the Ramban's only mutter when there's a suffix. The Shilta Giborim is only when there's no kavana. So there's no suffix when you put the pin in, and you certainly have kavana to have that light go on. The shaila is the other two answers. If it's a chiluk between Makarva Eish Eitzel Adavar or Makarav Adavar Eitzel Eish, or there's a difference between Shabbos and Ezekiel. So this, I think everyone pretty much accepts that this is Makarev HaEish Eitz L'Adavar. What you have is, you have this pin, and it's like taking something, like I said before, and putting it on a conveyor belt that's moving until it hits the switch. So you think about, when we say Isha Mishim Chitzav, I know people, there are people under the impression that you're allowed to throw a ball at a light. What's Chitzav? Chitzav is, you take something and you throw it at something else. That's clearly an action. There's no disputing that, right? Chitzav is to take something and throw it at something else. So what you do when you put something on a conveyor belt, that's very similar to Chitzav. It's a move, the clock is moving, right? That clock is moving. You can't see it moving, but it's moving because it was at 110 when I started this year, so it had to have moved. Just you can't see it moving. So same thing, the dial is moving very slowly, so you put the pin into the dial and it's moving slowly towards the switch, so that's Makarev HaEish Eitz L'Adavar. Whereas, let's say you have a device that's on, it's already on, connected to a timer. Let's say, so you have an air conditioner that's connected to a timer. Now the air conditioner itself is not on. So that, at least it's arguable that it's Makarev HaDavar Eitz L'Eish to turn on the air conditioner so that when the timer kicks in, the air conditioner will go on. I wouldn't necessarily pask in this way, but at least you can argue that point, that it's that in a real Shas HaDchak, if the timer set and you just didn't, you didn't turn on the air conditioner, that it might be Makarev HaDavar HaDavar Eitz L'Eish and be considered grum up. This is relevant to the dishwasher discussion. Some people set their dishwashers on timers. The problem is, the dishwasher will never go on calls mom if the door is open. The safety, they don't want hot water shooting out when the door is open. So anytime the dishwasher is open, the whole circuit is closed. There's basically like a switch inside the door. So when you close the door, you're completing the circuit, allowing the dishwasher to go on. So that's a discussion. There are some people who are making, I wouldn't recommend doing it for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it could be also Hashmas Kol, which we don't have time to go into, but dishwashers make some noise, and aside from the Malach issue, it's you may have that issue as well.
No.
But Hashmas Kol is a different concern. Hashmas Kol is like the audio version of Maris Ayin. But the Gemara already talks about it. The Gemara says that you can't have a Rechayim running on Shabbos because of Hashmas Kol. Like you can set up your windmill to grind your grains before Shabbos, meaning you put everything in the mill before Shabbos, and when the wind blows, it'll grind the grains. But the Gemara says that there's a problem with Hashmas Kol because people are going to think that you put the grains in right now. That whole discussion is relevant to electricity as well. I don't have time to get into that either. If you look on, you could read in the packet, there's Moshe has two tshuvas about microphones and hearing aids. They're both on the same page. I Xeroxed it in a funny way just so you could see it's on the same page. And they're basically the same thing, hearing aids and microphones. And he has two totally different answers. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman, Minchas Yitzchak, I think it's either Simon Tess or Simon Yud, discusses microphones and hearing aids as well. So he discusses the Hashmas Kol issue. But that seems to be the Iker Chilek between microphones and hearing aids, is that microphones you generally turn on right before. A hearing aid you leave on the whole time. So that's the that's where the Hashmas Kol issue maybe the distinguishing factor there. Yeah. Right. Well, a lot of other malachas, it's not. You'd have to change the terminology, or what other malachas do you have like that? That. I mean, if you can come up with a case, it would in theory.
Like by Shabbos practice, there's no ish to begin with. Let's say that the trigger of the Shabbos practice is considered to be whatever the malacha is.
Right.
There's nothing starting, and it's causing something to come closer to what will start.
Right. Yeah. So you're plugging in. Basically, you're the equivalent of the ish. And this is what many poskim say is the pin, and or either the ish. I'm sorry, is the malacha itself. Right, when the well, no, the switch is the davar and the pin is the H, so to say. The same thing with the, if you were to go back to the case of the jugs, right, the case of the jugs, what's the H? The H happens to there be an H, but it could be anything. If you took a knife and you threw it, then it wouldn't be called an H, it would be called something else. But the malacha is when you puncture the jug and let the water flow out onto the fire. Okay, so if you look in Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, he paskins, again, because Rosh Shlomo Zalman held like the fourth answer, that that it's really considered grama. So he paskins that on Shabbos you should never change the settings on the Shabbos clock unless it is like a major, major shasatak. Combination of two factors. One is that even if it is grama, it's only mutter b'shasatak. And since a lot of people argue on him, so he requires not a regular shasatak, but a major shasatak. And then on Yantiv, he's a little bit more makel. That's the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, and they say that Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Willard told me this, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky didn't want to give a haskama to Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa because of that one psak. That a lot of other poskim were machmir on this. In terms of removing the pin, so if it's an off pin, so basically all you're doing, I'm sorry, if it's an on pin, so the light will never go on. So that pretty much everyone accepts, that's mutter, right? The light's supposed to go on at 8 o'clock, you pull the pin out at 7 o'clock, nothing will ever happen. So you can't call it a malacha, nothing happened, nothing will happen, etc. What about having the light stay on? So again, most of the poskim say the same thing. The light was on, you pulled the pin out, the light stays on. Rav Binyamin Zilber has a safe, he has many svarim. It's like about 20 volumes, Az Nidburu. So he tainas that it's similar to what the Gemara says, nosing shemen b'ner is chayev. If you have let's say an oil flask that's burning oil, and you put in more oil, so that's a malacha d'oraisa. So those who disagree, those who address this taina directly, Ravad Yosef says this, is that there's a big difference between nosing shemen shebener and pulling out the pin in the timer. Nosin shemen shebener, you are directly affecting the candle, right? Whereas the light bulb will continue to burn until something else happens to turn it off. Right? It's going to stay burning forever until you either turn the switch off or the Shabbos clock turns the switch off. So by pulling out the pin, you're just maintaining the status quo. That's not a problem. The one problem that the Shmir Shabbos Hilsa addresses is to pull out this, well, this two technical problems. One is to pull out the pin and move it to a later time. So once you pull out the pin, if you hit pause right now, so now you have a Shabbos clock with nothing in it. So now when you put the pin in, it's like you're putting it in lechatchila, which again is not permitted according to most poskim. So what he suggests, an interesting suggestion, is to back up, meaning to put another pin in first behind it, and that pin at this point is useless. Then pull out the first one, and then the one behind it is there. You got that? Basically, if you had, we have colored, if you have, let's say, the green pin is, if this is the switch, right, so you have the green and then the red's going to turn it off when it gets to here, so put in another red hair, and then pull out this one, and then you don't have that problem of the, well, you could read about it in the packet. Rosh Shlomo Zalman talks about it in the Tshuva. He also talks about muktzah. Is it muktzah to pull out the pin? So, Rosh Shlomo Zalman, he has two interesting ideas. Well, one really interesting idea that he says, look, if it's mutter to pull out the pin, so half the time you're using a Shabbos clock, it's not even for an issur, right? And especially if you hold like him, then it's mutter to put them in. But even if you hold it's usher to put them in, but to take them out is mutter. So every, what's the shimush for this clock? You put them in, you take them out. 50% of the time, meaning 50% of the time you're putting them in, 50% of the time you're taking it out. So he thinks the pins are klishim lachta leheter. Klishim lachta leisr ula heter, which is mutter. But then he says, even if it's a klishim lachta leisr, so klishim lachta leisr is mutter what? Letzarach gufo, letzarach makomo. And since you need the pin out, so that's mutter. And Moshe, although he doesn't deal with the svara directly, he says that it's muktzah. So I thought the hesbro was, do you really call that klisha malafto do you call that tzora gufo makomo if you're pulling it out? What do you need it for? You need it not to be there. So is that considered tzora gufo makomo? That's a big, if you learn muktzah, that's a big discussion. You know, if you have something that you don't want, it's a klisha malafto l'isser, and you don't want it there, you let it move it. It's part of a broader discussion. Do we start primarily from that all kalim are usher to move until you find the heter attachments to move them, or all kalim mutter to move unless they're it's sort of usher? Yeah.
There are some spots that have like 24 pins on it. You push in or you pull out.
Yeah, there are.
People are better.
Those are better in some ways.
It's better because you don't have to worry about like taking out at any second. Like there's always pins there.
Yeah, but just as a matter of practical advice, those are all low voltage. I've never seen a high voltage Shabbos clock like that. So don't put an air conditioner on one of those.
I have.
Oh, you do have them. Okay.
Those are the same.
It would be, you'd have to follow sort of like the same rules, meaning you can maintain it, the status quo, leaving it on, or it's not a problem to, you know, if you want to delay the time, so just get another pin. The problem is you lose them. They're very easy to lose, and then you don't have that extra pin to deal with. Thermostats basically are the same general rule. Now I have a water bottle. I used to have this whole contraption. They would have never let me on the plane with it. But a thermostat, basically, the old thermostats, not the ones that are digital. And again, same thing with the timers. Now all the timers are going digital, so this whole discussion is going to be irrelevant in 10 years. But the old thermostats, the ones where you just pull them one way or the other. So basically the way it works is, let's say this is mercury. So you have a wire here and a wire here. That's your switch. So when the tube is like that, so the mercury conducts electricity, it connects the whole thing. When the tube's like that, so it doesn't. So there's two metal pieces, and depending on the temperature, they go this way, they go that way. You know, metal expands and contracts based on heat. It's amazing how accurate these things are. But basically, so when the thing is on, let's say, so if you just turn the thermostat, nothing's happening, right? It's just going to stay on. Right? The two wires are connected, they're still connected. And same thing if it's off. So you want to pull it away a little. So if you have a thermostat, so to raise, you know, basically to move it in the direction where nothing's going to happen is okay. And to move it against the grain, and generally with a thermostat, if you move it even a little bit the other way, it's going to kick right on. That's because if you have a properly functioning air conditioner or heater. I would be more hesitant to do this anyway with heaters, because heaters are real shiloh with daraisa. But, you know, just to tamper with the thermostat, it's not as simple as I just explained. But with an air conditioner thermostat, if you move it in the same direction in which it already is, so you're just maintaining the status quo. So if the air conditioner is on, you can make it cooler. If it's off, and the same thing with those dial air conditioners. If it's off, meaning if the compressor is off, you can make it cooler. You just have to know what your compressor sounds like, because sometimes it sounds like it's on, but it's just the fan. An air conditioner has a fan and a compressor. So the dial controls the compressor, and the fan, depending on whether it has any energy saver or not, is either always on or on with the compressor. Okay.
Is that the same thing with a refrigerator and doors?
Refrigerators, if you want to adjust the thermostat on the fridge.
Or like some people only open the refrigerator door when it's
running. Right. If you hold that it's usher to open the fridge, then you can still open it when it cycles on. Because you're basically forcing the warm air in, it's going to stay on for longer. We're going to do psik ration right now, in the next 12 minutes. Okay. So, let me just bottom line it here. There is a there is, psikresha means that it's an action, an unintended, with an unintended result, but it's inevitable. There's no way to avoid it. So there is a concept of davar sheino miskave, right, that if you don't intend to do something, it's mutar on Shabbos, with one exception, that if it's unavoidable, there's no way to avoid that secondary result, so then it's a psikresha and it's usher. And it's not only usher, it's chayat. That's clear from a lot of Gemaras. You can look at the Gemara of Gimel that's in the packet. It's clear that we're talking on the level of Deraisa. Okay, there is a machlokas between Tosus and the Arach. Tosus holds that psik reisha is chayev, and psik reisha delo nichale, if you don't benefit from that unavoidable, unintended result, so then it is asur means rabbana. And the Arach holds that it's mutter. So if you have an unintended result and you don't want that result, that's totally mutter. There's another machlokas about psik reisha where the result is drabana. And this could be a psik reisha even if it's nichale, right? Even if you want it to happen, but the result is drabana. So Trumas HaDeshen is mekel and the Magen Avram is machmir. The Mishaburua follows the Magen Avram, he's machmer on this, and as well we follow Tosus as opposed to the Arach. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan in Be'er Yitzchak is makel on this machlokas between the Trumas HaDeshen and the Magen Avram. Rabbi Schwartz told me that he heard from Rav Tubby Goldstein that the minhag in Europe was to be makel on this, but for some reason it's not that accepted here to just be makel on a straight psik reisha on a drabana. But a lot of poskim combine the two, meaning if it's a psik reisha and the result is drabana and it's lo nichalei, so now we have what to talk about. Rav Avad Yosef has this svara. Rabbi Willig used to give contemporary halacha on this, and he used to. Does he still do?
Yeah, he still does.
Okay, so you'll hear it at some point.
Next year.
So he advocates this approach, and if you don't go with this approach, you know, Lomatsinu Yadenu Varaglenu, anywhere. You can't go anywhere nowadays because, you know, you walk outside here, you're being videotaped by the camera up on top of the roof in Belfer Hall, and this, you know, and then you walk by a car and you set off an LED light from the car alarm. So there's no way to go anywhere if you don't have some sort of cooler with psik reisha nowadays. So that's the basic yisod that. I'm not saying that everyone holds like this. The Shmir Shabbos requires two drabonas, even if it's lo nichalei. You could read in Rabbi Willig Sefer, he has a whole discussion about this. But some poskim require only one drabonan and lo nichalei, and then it's mutter, a psik reisha is mutter. So this plays out in a number of different ways. For example, you know, opening up a fridge. So opening up a fridge is a psik reisha de nichalei on a deraisa, right? Because the light bulb, if you forgot to take the light bulb out, and you open up the fridge, and the light goes on, so it's a psik reisha de nichalei on a deraisa. As you're turning on the light benefits you, even though you could scream from today till tomorrow, I don't want the light, because then I can't open up my fridge. So Shlomo Zalman says that's faulty logic. You have to see whether it's beneficial to you on Tuesday to determine whether it's beneficial. And basically, when it comes to electricity, they put it in there to benefit somebody. Like, whatever's in there, it's there because it's beneficial. They didn't have some engineer waste two years of his life just so that to make it lo nichalei. If there's some electric contraption and it's in there and it's in the specs and they advertise it, you could assume it's nichalei. Now, if you don't own the fridge, let's say, so it may not be that beneficial for for the light to go off. There are rare exceptions, but generally when it comes to all these things, they are nichalei. So you have to be aware of that. Another area where you have nichalei are these light sensors. You know, you walk by somebody's house and the light goes on. And that light may not be there to benefit you, but depending on the lighting in that specific area, it may actually allow you to see a little bit better so you can get down the street. We have one on our block. For some reason, I don't know why, but it only turns on after you're already past it. So it's not as nichalei because you don't actually, you only, like, you like you see behind you, that the light went on. But so that there's two areas besides this psikration lo nichale that may be relevant to all these discussions. One is that there were two considerations. One is that there's this very interesting psak of the Rashba, based on Yerushalmi. This is the Rashba and Shabbos on Daf Kuf Zayin. So the Rashba says that let's say you have, Yerushalmi says, let's say you have a deer walk into your house. So Yerushalmi says if you close the door, it's mutter. So the Rashba interprets that to mean that you're allowed to close the door even though the deer is inside the house and now he's trapped inside your house, even though your kavana is not necessarily, because your kavana is only for, or primarily to close the door. Right? You don't want people coming into your house, so you close the door and the deer is inside. So he says that's mutter. So the Ran says, what are you talking about? That's a psikration. That's the classic psikration. And the Ran interprets Yerushalmi that when Yerushalmi says mutter, it means you don't have to open the door. Once you realize that you closed it on the deer, you don't have to let the deer out. Right? But so how do you answer the kasha of the Ran? Why isn't that a psik resha to close the door on the deer? So the Avnei Nezer starts this off, from Zalman Nechemi develops it in terms of a practical contemporary discussion, and he says the following yisod. The Rush says, let's say somebody was in this room, you went to the door and you locked it. So now this person can't get out. You just locked the guy in the room who was in here already. So that's grumma. That's the Russian Baba Kama. That's grumma. Right? Even though the guy won't be able to go to work today, and he'll lose his salary for the day, whatever, you didn't do anything to him. He was in the room already and you went and locked the door. That's grumma. So why don't you say the same thing? Why isn't, if there's a deer in the room and I'm miscaving to close the door on the deer, so I should say that's grumma. Right? So it shouldn't be a malacha of tzad. But it is a malacha of tzad. Why is it a malacha of tzad? So the Avnei Nezer says, because malachas machsheves asur Torah. Sometimes malachas machsheves, which is a concept in Hilchos Shabbos, can come as a chumrah as opposed to a kula. So the malacha of tzad includes cases where you intend to trap the deer. But that's only if you intended to trap the deer. If you didn't intend to trap the deer, so there's no malacha at all. It's not a malacha of tzad. So the Avnei Nezer says that's why the Rashba says you can close the door of your house if your intention is not to trap the deer. Because if it's a quirk in the malacha of tzad, that the malacha is only a malacha if there's malachas machsheves involved. So Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, in a journal of Peres Shlomo, Chelek Vav, says the same thing would apply to all these remote sensor devices. That, and he bases himself on a Magen Avraham, that really just walking by, let's say, a video camera or a light, wouldn't be a malacha directly, we consider it grama. Just that if you wanted to be on the camera or you wanted to trip the light, so then it would be malachas machsheves, that would be asur. But if your kavana is not necessarily to trip the light or not at all to trip the light or to be on the video camera, so then you could apply the Rashba. Now we don't paskin like this Rashba, but it's a snif lahakel, that it's used in these types of sticky situations that you can't get out of as an additional consideration. Another consideration, and we'll conclude with this, is the, two more. I'll give you two more, because one of them is actually for real. There is a concept of suffix psikreishel isha avar. So the classic case of I'll give a modern example. You don't know if you unscrewed the light bulb in your fridge. So what happens when you open up the door? So if the light's connected, what's going to happen? It's for sure going to go on. But if you didn't, if you unscrewed it, it's for sure not going to go on. So is that a regular davar shenu miskaven, or is that a regular suffik iser daraisa? So the Taz thinks that it's mutter, suffik psik resha. And Rabbi Kiva Eger and Yerudea seems to disagree, although if you look in the Malamed Lahovil, he discusses this in the packet, that it may not be a stira. The Rabbi Kiva Eger Rabbi Kiva Eger clearly disagrees, but the Ramah that Rabbi Kiva Eger is quoting is talking about basar v'chalav, to pour like meat into a pot, or to stoke the coals on the fire where there may be basar v'chalav on top, so is that that's a suffix psikresha of basar v'chalav. See, so the Malam and Lahoil distinguishes between Shabbos and Shari Surim. And on Shabbos, Safek Psik Reisha is Mutter, and in Shari Surim, Safek Psik Reisha is Aser. And the Shemir Shabbos Kehilchasa passes like that in the Chelek Gimel, the thin volume that came out a few years ago. So he paskins like that, or at least he's a big fan of that svara, that you distinguish between Shabbos and other areas of halacha. So for example, you go to a water fountain. You don't know if the water is going to, if that motor is going to kick in when you press the button or not. So according to the Malam and Lahoil, so it would be mutter. Now the Mishnah Berurah himself, even though he doesn't follow this approach, but the Mishnah Berurah says that you can be makel under Rabbanan. So he might also, in that water fountain situation, allow you to press the button on the water fountain, not knowing what's going to happen after that. If you know what's going to happen, if you have a water fountain that always kicks in the second you press the button, which means the tank is about this big, so then that's going to be a problem. But if it's a bigger tank and you don't necessarily know that it's going to kick in right away, so then it's not a problem. So and then a third consideration of psik reisha is psik reisha shel achar zman. I don't want to use the word grumma, but people call it psik reisha ayde grumma, but it's not really grumma. So for example, you open up the fridge. So the motor doesn't kick in right away. The motor may kick in 2-3 minutes from now. So poskim are makel basically because, and we don't have time to go into the lumbus of psik reisha, but psik reisha means that it might only be when you define the result immediately, as meaning that your action is defined by the result. So if the result doesn't occur immediately, so then that's not a psik reisha, and that might be mutter. So a lot of examples of this. You open up the refrigerator, it goes on a few minutes later. The case with that I discussed at the beginning, that was one of Rosh Hashanah and Svaras. You turn on the hot water tank, and so the cold water will start seeping in, but the electricity won't kick in until 30 seconds, a minute later. So that's a heter, or opening up the oven for that matter. If you're going to rely on psik reisha shel achar zman, so yeah, when you open up the oven, so even though the oven is more chamor than a refrigerator, because an oven, you're talking about a malacha d'oraisa, there's glowing hot, either a fire or a glowing hot filament in there. But if you accept this idea of psik reisha shel achar zman, so it could be mutter to open up the oven even when it's off, and you're going to cause it to sort of ignite. Okay, so let's stop here. Any questions?
Are we assuming that microprocessor is, like, what's the problem with microprocessor? You mentioned it a whole bunch of times.
The problem with there's no inherent problem with microprocessors. The problem is that what used to be very simple is now not as simple. So, you know, for example, in an alarm system, it used to be that either the door is open or the door is closed. Now the alarm systems sort of measure, like, how they know whether the door is open or closed, not based on a switch being open or closed necessarily, but based on how much electricity is flowing through the whole system. So it's not, meaning everything still works based, you know, all these things that are activated based on something that you do are going to work based on some sort of switch. Just that the microprocessor thing just makes it more complicated in terms of, you know, or like a hearing aid. It used to just be, you turn a hearing aid on and it's on, and it'll just change current based on how you talk into the hearing aid. Now a hearing aid might have a microprocessor which will turn up the volume as somebody's talking, turn down the volume when it's a little quieter, and, you know, have like a switch that turns on and off when somebody speaks and somebody doesn't speak. So, you know, the sky's the limit once you talk, or going back to the radical example I mentioned at the beginning, the fridge that tells, you know, when you put something in the fridge, now it says, oh, you know, it's sort of like registers. Oh, he just put the milk back. Okay, so there's no way to do that without electricity. Right? It's not like it has its own brain. It's, you know, it's electric. It's just, it's not inherently more different. It just makes things more complicated, and we're no longer talking about on and off anymore. We're talking about, you know, how much weight is on shelf one in the fridge or shelf two. It just becomes, you know, again, more complicated, but not necessarily different. Yeah.
This is like a lot of people like visit hospitals and stuff and they have electric doors.
Okay, so when the door is open, you can go in behind. you're not tripping a switch, you're just maintaining the status quo that the door is not going to close. That's not a problem. But to walk in front of the door, unless even the Rashba will agree that that's a problem, because you want to be in the path of that light, and the Rashba, it's not even a psik resha. It's a Devar HaMiskaven. That's the way to open the door. You stand in front of the door and it opens. People would wait, you know, people would put their hand in front. That's the way it opens. So it's not even a psik resha. Yeah.
Are there Shabbos elevators in existence?
Shabbos elevators? Shabbos elevators is somewhat complex. There's a big machlokas between Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Levi Yitzchak Halperin in terms of when you're just standing in the elevator, and so the elevator is going to react to what you do, is that a problem? You know, just the simple fact that you're in the elevator, can you violate a malacha just by being somewhere? That's the whole discussion. Rav Shlomo Zalman is makel on this, in terms of going up and going down. Rav Levi Yitzchak Halperin doesn't...
For all of them, every Shabbos elevator is okay?
No, there's still some, meaning there's the general concept of Shabbos elevators, but then there's a lot of issues that have to be dealt with. You know, there's a sensor to make sure that the door doesn't slam on you, and that, you know, depending on what we're talking about, might be a problem. There's a counterweight that may measure like how many people are in the elevator. Again, that's a psik resha delo nichale. So, you know, I guess if you're like the first guy in the elevator, it probably doesn't make much of a difference. If you're the 10th guy in the elevator, I don't know. I don't know exactly how it works. But if it's made properly, then, you know, in a shas of chak, people use it. You know, young, healthy people take the steps. Somebody, when I was teaching this in Stern, somebody asked me, like, what's the shiur? How many floors? There is no shiur. I mean, you know, if you're, if you could do 20 flights, do 20 flights. And yeah.
You know, places where, I think it was Sheraton in Yerushalayim, you know, people, you can't walk from the first floor to any of the other floors, or we'll use the library here. I mean, I don't know that anyone would want to go into the library here on Shabbos, but if it's open.
Right.
But you can't walk from the first floor to the second floor.
So if you can't go, so that's the Shasa Chak, if you can't go home. I'm saying, if that's where you're staying, so that I would call that a Shasa Chak. I mean, that would be a case where one relying on the Shabbos level. All it is an elevator on a timer. And it's going up, going down, stops on every floor. As long as they took care of, you know, I'm sure in a real place like that, they probably took out made the counterweight non-electric or something, or I don't know exactly how they dealt with that. But, you know, and the sensor, I think it will close on you. If you go in after the buzz, after it starts buzzing, it won't open for you if you're in the doorway. I mean, we know from these elevators that if you get stuck, you just pull it open. But maybe these are new. I don't know. It used to be like that, but it just closed on you after a while, because otherwise the elevators wouldn't get anywhere. So that's fine. And there's no sensor to open it again. Okay.
Mincha.
Mincha.